August 30, 2022. It's the What from Pedro Show.
Thank you.
What for Pedro show? Happy Tuesday,
happy
right,
Tuesday
brother, man?
Happy Tuesday this week, yeah.
Yeah, let's mute the 30th. Fucking thing. 21 years and 3 months of doing the show, and I'm still blowing clams. Start off the show. How are you? And how was Sunday for you in Pasadena, brother, man?
This ain't no picnic. Was bitching, man. You guys rocked that stage. It was so cool having those giant video monitors on the side. The whole day was fun. It was a cool time.
And we played in front of Mr. Chen's Ghost Fish. A photo.
Yeah, yeah.
We started off the show today with John Coltrane doing Time Was, and then Sleepyhead with Play. Speaking of Sleepyhead, Brother Matt, who do we got via Skype?
We got some Sleepyheads.
We got some Sleepyheads. And we want to check out their journeys through music, which I've been enlightened to the fact that they're all different. But Rachel wants to go first. So, Rachel, please bring your earliest musical memory.
Well, I guess my earliest musical memories are around the campfire with aunts and uncles playing guitar. So that was part of my growing up. That's very, I think, very typical, and that was really fun. But it did not push me in the direction of playing any instrument myself. So for me, when I think of my younger years, so middle school, high school, that was all about singing, musical theater. Like, I missed all the great bands of the 80s in Boston because I was doing musical theater productions in my high school. But I loved it. That made me very happy.
Okay, let me go back before that. Like, in the pad you grew up, because you said at the campfire you had relatives with guitars. Was there any instruments in the pad where you grew up?
Well, there were, but I wasn't.
You never jumped on them.
There was a drum set my whole life, but I was never allowed to play it because we lived in apartments. So
why was there a drum set?
There was a drum set because my dad had played when he was in high school and a little bit in college. Never really in a band, just for fun, kind of catch as catch can.
And he just had them set up there like some people have paintings on the bulkhead. He had drum set there, but don't play it. What about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No choir.
Okay, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
I think the first record I bought with my own money was Tattoo You.
Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Nice. So that was eighth grade, I think.
And what was the first gig you saw?
That was Boy George, but that was an aberration.
Culture Club or Boy George?
What?
Culture Club or Boy George?
I feel like it was just Boy George, but this is a long time ago, so I'm not going to.
You know that guy before he was in Culture Club was a boxer?
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah. He's kind of a big dude, you know. You know, he's wearing the makeup and all the funny clothes,
but he's kind of
a big dude.
Right, because wherever
so you said you
show,
got into music
very,
in
yes.
high school.
Yes.
So I'm not talking about graduating, but in the afternoon, did you get into the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band kind of thing?
No.
Well, I wasn't there, so I got to ask you this till I get this fucking mind reading thing figured out. I just wonder. A lot of people. That was their gateway drug, right? The just jamming with your friends to get...
Right, no, that did not happen until I was in college. And so 2 years into college, I switched dorms. I was an RA. I met Chris. He lived on my floor. And I dated a guy who was in a band. And that exposed me to all these small bands playing little places all around New York City. And even though we broke up, I really liked the scene, and so the summer between my junior and senior year, I said, I'm going to learn how to play something, and somehow I managed to convince my father to let me set up the drums and just covered them with all sorts of stuff so they didn't make any noise, and then I dragged them back to NYU, and that is when I finally went to the basement in the band with Chris and Mike. He can talk about how he met Mike, our first bass player. And that was the beginning, and we sort of just launched into trying to play original songs. And the only way the musical theater helped me, I would say, reflecting back, is that tap dancing is close to drumming, so that helped me. Because I never had any lessons, that was the thing, so I just sort of brought the drums and did it.
Okay, so yeah, I think either singing or drums was the first probably musical instruments. With humans.
So you
want to go next, Chris?
Sure.
What's your earliest musical memory?
Yeah, my, like, I grew up in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and my parents, like,
what was that band from there? Was it the Freeze?
Yes, the Freeze are from Massachusetts, yep. And the Incredible Casuals, which shares some NRBQ members also from Cape Cod.
And I think John Waters likes to hang out in the summertime there.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yep, definitely. So it's like, it's not close, like it's about an hour and a half from Boston and a little bit closer to Providence. We had a piano in the house that my grandmother had given to my parents, and my mother had an acoustic guitar, but she played a little bit, but not really very much. But they did appreciate music, and they basically had my sister and I take piano lessons. I think I was 5 probably, and I wasn't all that interested in it at first.
Well, you know, that's a key moment in a lot of guests we've had on the show is the whole, sometimes it's a brutal experience, the piano lesson trip. And we've found it's usually not the piano's fault, it's the teacher.
Yeah, well, that's funny because the teacher was this really nice older woman, and we would go to her house, and her house was like crazy, full of plants, and she had about like 20 cats, and I'm not exaggerating. She just like cats, she just let them in her house, and actually my sister and I each had a half hour lesson, and we would wait while the other one did the lesson, and I think both of us enjoyed the half hour that we weren't doing the lesson because we could play with the cats. And we didn't have any cats at my house. But she was very nice. So it wasn't a bad experience other than I do remember a few recitals when I was younger that I was like really nervous about. But it did give me a good sense of music, like the piano, the sort of visual aspect of the keys sort of matching musical notation. I switched to saxophone like in middle school, and in fact, I played the saxophone up until 9th grade when I was in the marching band.
So you were in the marching band. I asked this question about the school ship because, you know, some schools get rid of their arts and their music programs.
Yeah.
You know, also their lesbian dance theory. Is that the other?
I didn't have that.
Clean everything up, right?
Yeah, I was getting a little tired of the saxophone by then. My parents said, you got to do at least your first year of high school. You got to do it, and then you can decide after that if you want to continue. So fair enough. I did it my 9th grade. I think I kind of enjoyed it. But then
let me ask you, since I'm a big John Coltrane fan, was it alto, soprano, or tenor? Or baritone?
I don't think there was even a tenor sax in the whole marching band. It was always alto for
little guys, kids.
Yeah, but nowadays, like our son who played the guitar in his jazz band in high school, they had tenors and baritones and everything. But that was a much
I
more
went to a, the Violent Femmes had me come see them play, and they had some cat, like, way baritone. He had to get up on a ladder.
Oh. Yeah, those are crazy.
I mean, so what was the first record you bought with your own money?
I should remember that. So the first record, vinyl record, I don't know if it, so I, like the Columbia Tape Club thing I did a bunch, but the first record I bought was on a school French trip to Quebec City, and I bought Simple Minds' Sparkle in the Rain and brought it home back to Massachusetts.
What was the first gig you saw?
All right, the first gigs I saw, this is my parents. So I saw the Clancy Brothers at the Cape Cod Melody Tent when I was a kid. Then I saw Neil Diamond at the Providence Civic Center, like on the big...
I just asked for the first gig, okay? Jesus Christ. Maybe these questions are complicated tricks.
Yeah, but then here's the one you're really getting at. I had an older friend. He's actually... He was in the sub-pop band Six Finger Satellite, but not at the time, but he
I got to play some gigs with Six Finger Satellite, Providence Band.
Yeah, so he's a family friend. I've known John McClain, the guitar player from Six Finger Satellite, since I was a baby, actually, because our parents are friends. He took me to see X at the Orpheum in Boston.
X
and
the letter or EX, the Dutch band?
X, the L.A. band.
Yeah,
X.
John Doe and Exene.
Yeah, and I was in 8th grade at the time, and that just blew my mind. So, and then not too long after that, we saw REM together. And then
I just want to know the first gig. You can only have your first gig once, you know.
I would say X.
I'll read your tour diary.
Yeah.
Get the list of all the gigs you saw. So you continue on with me when you went to where Rachel meets you at college. Did you go to college for music?
No, English.
Okay, so music was kind of, during school, you were doing it in school, but did you do the afternoon thing, like the basement band, garage band, bedroom band?
Yeah, a little bit with two friends in high school. But we didn't do very much. It was a drummer, who was actually a good drummer, and another kid who played guitar. And, like, our biggest accomplishment is we learned how to play That's When I Reach for My Revolver. But
Mission to Burma.
Yes. But none of us really wanted to sing, so it was a strictly instrumental version.
And was practice band, or did you guys ever do gigs?
Nah, just practice.
Okay. I'm just want to know. You know, there's a lot of paths. Like Rachel said, everybody's different. She's different. We're all the same, but she's different. Now you meet her because you guys are on the same floor of the dormitory?
Yeah.
And she sees you're doing music on the side, and she...
Yeah, because I brought my guitar, freshman year.
And she wants to be part of this, okay.
Yeah.
So you guys make a... Is this Sleepyhead, or is it
another...
Yeah,
it is.
Oh, it is, okay.
It so started this is the beginning in 1989, the band started.
Okay. Can you remember the first Sleepyhead song? Well, did you write songs before this band?
No, not really.
So this is your first time writing songs, right? So can you remember the first Sleepyhead song?
Yeah, I think it was called Albatross. It actually came out on this Shimmy Disc compilation that Mike McGonigal put out. I think that was the first one we ever wrote.
And what about the first Sleepyhead gig?
Yep. Oh, yeah. The coffee house in the dorm.
Yep. We were the musical guests of a comedy group that did a Saturday Night Live type of show, and we played a couple of songs in the middle of it in the dorm.
How'd it go?
It was great. We did a Sex Pistols cover, Holidays in the Sun, and maybe one or two of our brand new first songs we ever wrote, and it was cool. And then it was in the dorm, so everyone in the dorm came down to watch it. It was like a built-in crowd. And
yeah.
Now you and Rachel were in the band, but there was other members, right? Because she mentioned something about another bass player.
Yeah, Mike was the first bass player, Mike Galinsky. So he was the bass player throughout the 90s. Like, when we first started, he went to NYU, too.
Yeah, he lived in the dorm. And then when he went off to be a filmmaker, Dan Cuddy, who's in the Special Pillow now, was our bridge to Derek, who then worked at my school here up in Massachusetts, and that's how we met. Because Dan was staying in New York, he couldn't do it forever. But he was critical. He kept the band going when we moved back here with our first kid.
And how did you get that name, Sleepyhead?
So that I'll try to do the short version. It relates to the coffee house. So we had no name, but we had the show. And we were also practicing huge amounts of hours per night. And so that makes you tired. And it was college when you have enough time to have a nap in the afternoon. So one day I was having a beautiful nap, and we had the practice space signed out, and Chris and Mike came to get me. And I was so tired and so wonderfully asleep, they just couldn't really wake me up, and they shook me awake. And I was kind of groggy, and Mike, in a very frustrated voice, said, "We should just call the band Sleepyhead after you." And we just looked at each other, and we said, "That's it." And that's how we got the name.
All right, I want to play some Sleepyhead.
Sometimes when I take good, long on the ground, I shift into the talk about today and use those future tenses. The glory of love, is this a party or a brawl? I'm gonna count to ten and then we're gonna fall. Let's work together, we're always going down. Just don't know what else.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
like I just went somewhere.
Thank you.
well, good morning, you're standing for. And every new day is just more and more. And I'm not sure that they're you.
Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with Sleepyhead doing Punk Rock City, USA. Then the Casual Dots with The Frequency of Fear. Primary Mystical Experience with Battle of the Future. Noisuka with Robo Nobo Daddy Cop. Make America Cool, in parentheses. Diane Marie Kloba with Undaunted Love. XV with Good Night. Return of the Evil Jazz Man from Bombas Prendon. Tropical Fuckstorm with Moonburn. And finally, again, sleepyhead with? What's going to set you free? So, Derek, your turn. Please bring your earliest musical memory.
My earliest musical memory was seeing bar band in Malta when I was 5 years old on vacation with my family, and they were all like wearing like the red suits, matching suits, and they all had like the perfect hair, and it was like this outdoor stage, and I was just like mesmerized watching, you know, this Maltese bar rock band. I can't even tell you what the music was, but it was just like the whole spectacle, you know?
Yeah, well, the clothes.
Yeah, just like I was away, sitting right? up front, like 5 years old. I'm like, oh my god, this is like, these are guys playing instruments, they're all matching, they look cool. I'm like, this is what cool is.
Malta. I'd never been to Malta. I'd like to.
Yeah.
So where you grew,
up in
Holland. Where did you grow up, though?
In Holland.
In Holland. Which town?
Yeah. What's that? Wassenaar.
Okay.
It's outside of The Hague, about 40 minutes outside of The Hague.
What about instruments? Were there any in this pad you grew up?
Yeah. So my dad was actually, at one point, aspiring pianist, classical pianist, but he kind of gave that up, but... He, you know, I always heard him play, and he would sort of have people over, and they would sort of have these little small trios and play classical stuff.
And there's a piano in the pad. Did you get the lesson thing?
No. Surprisingly, out of all the brothers, I have three brothers, I was the only one who did not get musical education, which is...
But you end up on a keyboard. No, you said keys. You're not piano, right? So like
no,
like
I just
synthesizer.
Sort of noodle, yeah, nothing. No, just piano, and I would just sort of like, I'd hear stuff. I remember asking my dad, I'm like, how do you play this Motley Crue song, Home Sweet Home, you know? Like, show me the chords to that. I was, you know, I'm a little bit younger than
you.
Oh,
so you were taught by your father.
Well, I would just ask him stuff. Be like, show me a chord.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
What about the first record you bought with your own money?
You know, growing up in Holland, so it's a little different experience in the 70s.
70s Holland, that's Golden Earring.
Yeah, we saw Golden Earring, but I didn't really know Golden Earring at the time, I think, until I came to America and I saw their
video. I think
they're
still together.
Wow. Yeah, you see the guys. He's actually lives in The Hague. You can still see him there.
Which one, the guitar man?
The main guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw him, you know, because they had a big hit on the FM rock radio, right, Radar Love.
Yeah, but Radar Love.
The gigs weren't like that. They were mainly like progressive. The guy whipped out a flute.
Really?
I wouldn't shit you, Derek. So what was the first gig you saw?
What's that?
What was the first gig you saw?
It was probably Twisted Sister opening up for Iron Maiden.
It's the Watt from Pedro show, so there's no hard questions, there's no wrong answers.
Yeah, Twisted Sister opening up for Iron Maiden.
And what about... school, marching band or choir, any of that shit?
I did. I played, you know, like what you said, the sort of the basement band on the weekends. There wasn't a lot to do growing up in Florida when I moved to America, so we kind of made our own.
No, I'm talking about like the school, like there's a marching band or...
No, marching band. Nope, nothing.
Or
really.
They'll have like the jazz band or the guys play recitals, that kind of shit.
No, none of that.
Because you didn't want it.
I just.
Or did the school have it? Because this is one of the reasons I asked that question.
It didn't seem cool to me. We had it, but it just didn't seem as cool.
You know,
to me
Flea's got this conservatory of music of Silver Lake, and he did that because he went back to high school, and where he learned how to play trumpet. They had gotten rid of the program, so this is one of the reasons why I asked this stuff. Some people think it's frivolous, I guess. My teaching.
Yeah, no. We did have this guy. I was involved in theater, and so my basement band, we were pretty good at doing like these Pink Floyd covers. So we actually put on a show at the school to raise money for the theater.
Was that your first gig?
That was, yeah, my first big gig, yeah.
Okay. And it was a success. You got raised money for the school, huh?
Yeah, to raise money for the arts program.
Yeah, sure. That's great. In fact, Martin Wong was at the gig Sunday, Brother Matt, and I've done several gigs. His daughter, Calistar, grade school in Chinatown. Oh, we did benefits so they could have instruments.
Cool.
Save Music in Chinatown. Remember those?
Yeah.
Really interesting. And how'd you meet these guys?
I teach with Rachel. So we did. There was a faculty variety show, and she found out that I could play guitar and bass.
So school is kind of, not grade school, but education is kind of the link that got Sleepyhead together.
It is true. And that faculty variety show was also to fund a scholarship fund. So it was to raise money so kids who didn't have the money to do study abroad weeks So, really, what we're learning is not enough money for the arts.
It's always beautiful.
So does your school where you guys work have music and marching band and stuff?
Yeah.
It does.
No, we don't.
What's your favorite color? Blue, no, brown.
No, I couldn't hear you, man.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 30, 2022. Dish Wap Pedro Show, special guest, Sleepyhead. Hold tight for hour two. August 30, 2022. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
Hoping you might drop by, and now here you are. Let me just grab my coat and my hat. We'll go down to the corner bar, have us some drinks and some laughs. A ha ha, a ho ho, a hee hee. And I was hoping you'd maybe stay, my darling. Maybe stay the night with me. I was hoping. There's a whole lot of pain and suffering all over the world tonight. Floods and wars and disasters. People ain't being treated right. but not a whole lot we can do about it. It's mostly out of our control. So I was hoping for at least a few moments of joy, some pleasure to soothe our soul. I was hoping, I was hoping, I was hoping. So if we could catch a little bit of respite from the woes of this weary world, that'd somehow be a little triumph, our little banner of victory unfurled. If we could seize this fleeting moment and make it yours, yours and mine, I got to tell you, my dear, I was hoping we could let our little love light shine. I was hoping, I was hoping, I was hoping. I was hoping, I was hoping, I was hoping. I was hoping.
My God, the morning, he's a bodega. But when I try
someone make a sound to.
for Pedro Show start off the second hour with The Coronation from Sleepyhead. And Sam Bennett with I Was Hoping, Medicine Singers, Daybreak. Sleepyhead again with The Box for Blue. Northern Jaw with All Molecules. Emily Robb with Pakula Trembles, a beat from Floating Problems. Wild Sometimes, Sleepyhead. Parasite number two, from Kiwi Jr. Ray Shin with It's Always 1989. And again, Sleepyhead with Pam and Eddie. Block of Sleepyhead. So, what about Torn? Did Sleepyhead get into Torn?
Yeah, in the 90s, we did a lot of touring. Rachel actually started teaching pretty young, so a lot of times it was during the summer, although there was one year I think he took a half a year off.
Yeah, and the school breaks. We could get pretty far in the 9 days from, like, Friday night of, like, an April or February vacation to the Sunday night. I'd bring papers and grade them in the van.
So that would be, like, we'd get out to Chicago and back to New York. But we did two full U.S. tours. One of them we opened for Polvo. The other one we opened for Codeine on the West Coast. We did one European tour in 96 and then lots of, like, you know, down to Florida and back to New York, like a week or two type of thing.
I-95 so, tour. I-95 tour, like we over here, we got I-5 tours, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then Chicago.
We played Chicago a lot at the Lounge Acts usually.
Oh yeah, they were very good to us.
Yeah.
Okay, and like you said, Mike lasted about 10 years.
Yeah. He recorded the album that came out in 1999, but he kind of quit the band right when we finished recording. Like, he was done with his parts. It wasn't not a bad, I mean, it was, it was
he
fine.
Was still shifting to film.
Yeah. So then we did a little bit of touring for that record with Dan on bass, who was in Hypno Love Wheel, and as Rachel said, Special Pillow. Then Rachel and I had a couple kids, so it slowed down a lot. And now our kids are older, so maybe we might have another shot to do some more touring again.
What was the first gig with Derek?
The first gig with Derek was a friend of ours in Providence organized this thing when John Kerry was running for president. So I guess that was 2004.
Yeah.
It was outside in downtown Providence, and that's when we were like, all right, Derek, we're doing a whole gig together. And then actually that's when we, you know, from then on we were like, oh, this is really awesome playing with Derek. So
how long did you practice with him before that gig?
Remember?
I don't know. I mean, we like playing music, so it was probably more than necessary for the gig. I mean, we like to play, so I think we probably just started playing for fun. We would do
a couple months maybe.
Yeah, a couple months. Friday afternoons.
But you guys were thinking just one gig. You didn't think this was the new version of the band?
No, but I think after the gig we thought.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so when you start playing with Derek, what about recording right away?
No, because we were finishing the album Wild Sometimes, which we had started.
That had the older people in the band then, right?
Yeah.
So then, but we did have the good idea that we had to get at least a few songs on that album recording with Derek. So a lot of those first years playing with Derek, we were playing and having fun and starting to write our own songs, the three of us together, and finishing Wild Sometimes, which just took a very long time. But then it was done, and then we put it out, and then from like the minute that was out, then we were just continuing, finishing the songs that were done, that the three of us made together, and now we just keep doing that, and keep
now,
doing
Now, Mike
that.
And Dan was the bass players.
Yep.
What does Derek do left hand?
Derek does a lot more, but way more than either of them. They just strictly played bass. Dan might have sung a couple of backup vocals, but Derek, like, bought a Wurlitzer at one point, and we practiced, you know, started playing with that. We're like, oh, this could go somewhere else. So then we started playing all, you know, and then also Derek can sing, and we started really working on having a lot more harmony vocals in our music, three-part harmonies. So Derek changed the band a lot in that sense. But I think for me, it made us able to play more music that, like, I think I had in my head that I don't never really were able to get actually on tape. But
well, let me ask you about that process. Do you make demos for the band?
Yeah, we usually what we do, like, Derek has a bunch of stuff at his house for, like, more serious home recording. We usually just, like, we'll get, like, a, you know, record something on our phone, and then I'll make, like, a simple acoustic demo on my iPad or something so that our producer has something before we go into the studio, so it's not just, like, going in there with nothing. But not super fancy demos, pretty basic.
Well, like that record, he was adding to stuff that was already recorded, right?
Derek, you mean?
Yeah, you're the first.
No. So that we were just finishing all the overdubs and mixing, and then we did three more.
I thought
more
you said
songs.
That you wanted him part of that record.
Yeah, but that's why we included. I think.
Oh, brand new tunes that were written with him.
Yes, okay. two new songs and a Bevis Front cover that Derek plays on those three songs.
Yeah.
Okay, but the other guys, the other tunes had the other guys.
Yeah, and all
the other ones had all Dan.
All the other keyboards on that record are Michael Deming, the producer, who's a really good Hammond player.
Has he done all your records?
No, we've had a bunch of different producers. We record a couple records with Martin Beasley, who you probably
know. Oh, yeah, I know Martin.
Yeah.
I was in the studio with the Sonic Youth when they did Evil, and it was trippy.
Well,
he didn't have a booth.
Yeah.
I think he has a booth now, but he was in the same room where they played, so how could you tell what was coming through the microphone?
that's Martin's vibe. We love Martin, but recording there, like, it was actually, Evol was probably the album that I felt like I was, like, in hallowed ground because that record had been recorded there. And then we recorded with this guy, Fred Brockman, that was a friend of ours from Hoboken, and then now up here, the most. Then we recorded with Michael Deming at Studio 45 in Hartford. And now we record with John Lupfer, who's at Q Division Studios. It's his studio, and that's our guy right now. He really was important to this newest record.
But we left somebody out. Our very, very first time in the studio.
John Sickett and Lyle Heisen, yeah.
Nope, before that.
Oh, Kramer. I forgot about
Kramer.
Yeah,
because you said something about Shimmy Disc.
Yeah, our first record was, our first 7-inch was Kramer at the Original Noise New York. And then
I think it was a compilation you were talking about, and you said that compilation actually had the first song you wrote.
Yeah, because I think the first song we wrote was not on the first 7-inch. And that Shimmy Disc compilation, the Chemical Imbalance / Shimmy Disc, was recorded with James Cavuzzi, who had the studio called Toxic Shock in New York. It was a great studio.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but I think Martin Beasley's was called BC, right?
Yeah.
Common era now, people say, but that's he's got Italian. You know, I got to play with him about 3 years ago. He was leading a band.
He was leading
a band, and it was in Toronto. Horseshoe.
That's fun.
Rachel played drums on, like, an EP of his, too.
Yes.
He actually made an SST record, I remember.
Yeah.
Like a Martin Beasley solo that has a Kachina doll, I think, on the cover.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
But a great guy, and it was good to see him again. And,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this idea where people who play also can record, you know.
Yeah.
One thing is equipment and everything's more econo, but I just think it's a great thing. And that's why I kind of asked you about demos and stuff. Now, you're saying Derek does home recording.
Yeah, during the time that we were recording the last album, started writing my own songs, which I'd never done before, and I just a whole bunch of them came out all at once, and I just wanted to record them at home, and I had my childhood friend who I met growing up when I moved to America, who just sat in with us. I've known this guy for 40 years. He would just sort of help produce me. You know, he could play drums better than I could, and he knew how to mix it, so we just sort of emailed stuff back and forth.
Trading files.
Yeah,
in the last couple of years. Well, I actually started around 15 years ago doing that. Made whole albums with people I've never even met. it's really a trip about that.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's like being at the bathhouse and the power goes off, right? Is that you? Is that you? It don't matter. Brother Matt, excuse me, good sleepyhead people, but it is time to bring forth the spin cycle.
Right on.
So we'll get...
So here we go. It's side four, snap, crackle, and pop of ESL, English as a Second Language.
It can be contacted from a wet, warm, moist substance, like a wet towel. So the main thing is whenever you find a wet towel, don't wipe it on your genitals, don't kiss it. Another way to not get herpes, especially being a girl, which I am, being a girl especially, that is, if one of your girlfriends wants to borrow your lipstick, flatly refuse. But, you know, maybe let her use a little bit. But if one of your girlfriends who has one of those crazy sores on her lips borrows your lipstick unauthorized, give her the lipstick. Being that I, as mentioned, am an expert in not getting herpes, first of all, you go into a public bathroom only when it's a necessity, and you do not touch anything in the public bathroom but yourself and paper towels. That's all you touch. You don't touch the handles, you use your feet. Of course, you do the old toilet flush with your feet. I mean, they have those, you know, those tissues, you know, those Polish tablecloths. Use those. If they don't have those, complain to management. Go outside, it's safer. Oh, yes, and for you people who have herpes, I don't want you to be worried about, oh, gosh, you know, meeting new guys and new girls. You're afraid to get intimate with them because, you know, you have to tell them that you have herpes or they could get it and, you know, the babies could be born blind. So they have now put together a place especially for people who have herpes. It's a new exclusive club. It's in Hollywood, and I believe it's called Herpes R Us, or is it called Herpes Only? I'm not real, or Dismembered Only, or something. Of course, I have nothing against people who have herpes. I can honestly say some of my best friends have herpes, and I think everybody should have one. But I did hear, you know, all this stuff about herpes. Don't worry about it. Forget it. If you've got it, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. The government is really working on it day and night, around the clock. They are working on a cure for herpes. In fact, I hear right now, in test conditions, they have a vaccine that is 95% effective against herpes. No big deal. You won't have herpes. There's one side effect. You get the shot. You lose the herpes, but you contact polio. It's sad, but, no, you know, what can I say? No big deal. I asked a few friends how they kept from getting herpes, and my dear friend Andy Chopini, the famous GQ lifeguard in Malibu, said that he uses the Truth in Sex Act. That is, that you tell the girl that if she lies to you and says she doesn't have herpes and she does, that after you have sex and you get it, you'll kill her. I mean, he says it works really good every time. It isn't very romantic, is it?
Every night I want to go insane. I put on my boots and my chains. We're going to know who's tough and who's lame. The world's going to know our name. DSY! 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 1, 2, 3, 4! Mindless destruction! No rules from me! Mindless destruction! No rules for you!
I held on to the crumbs of a half-smoked joint tightly while clutching my hands behind my back. He tapped me on the shoulder and said, "What have you got?" I felt so poorly that I could only type in lowercase. She was allergic to bullshit, and she could feel her eyes watering. Her eyes were turning yellow, and her skin was crawling at the sight of his name on a plain white envelope. Her lips stung as she tried to speak. But what did it all mean? She wouldn't call it love. His skin was too pale. Her only hope was eternal salvation. She had nothing to fear. The idea had a lukewarm reception. She danced into the living room. How did I know we never had...
Okay, what's going to happen when the big earthquake hits?
Who knows? That's what I have to find out, right?
When a big earthquake hits, everybody will be eating shit in their condos and their rent-a-cars. And we'll just all be, we'll be partying for the last time and then just, you know, dying off and floating into the ocean.
That's right. More to come.
Okay, can we talk about the beach? What beaches do you guys go to? What do you like or dislike about
it? Malibu is real cool because, you know, it eliminates the low class element of our society. I mean, Malibu to me is like real WASP and, you know.
It is.
They're so kind of on a weird level, but Iranians and Negroes and, you know, Jews and that whole bit.
Oh.
Man, there was a piece of shit playing at the X tonight. But check out all the fucking tricks hanging out on the boulevard tonight.
I'm right. Who?
I mean, like, this other dude. Oh, fuck yeah. This dude, like, offered a friend of mine $250 per head. But later we heard he was into...
Sleazy was he, Garth?
Oh, he was real sleazy. I mean, like, herpes and hepatitis gone three times over.
Sick. Ew.
No, it's like the war and everything else. It's like what our generation has produced is a bunch of stupid, pretty clones at ours. Or the war, or nuclear destruction, or communism, or anything. We're too busy shopping to think about those things because, you know, it's like that all that matters to our generation is that we're beautiful and that by 16 we owned a 450 SLC Mercedes. Art and poetry is bullshit. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any drugs. It doesn't have any action. No pretty pictures. So... to the teenagers of Los Angeles, California, it's nothing. We need noise. We need drugs. We need sex. We need rock rebellion. We need rock and roll. And as far as being poetic and all that's concerned, it doesn't mean shit to us.
Now the news has hit the streets. Our love is in danger. Watch out for impeccable strangers. That insidious female with a pink corsage might be a case of sabotage. Some inner pinball signal tilt when she asks you for a light. So cool and nonchalant, you didn't need to be too bright. To watch your pieces fall together in that sinister collage. Whoa, double cross and sabotage. Now that woman is a slimy operator, doing what I knew she would. But you've been a willing collaborator, honey. You're up to no good. Oh, you delivered all our secrets and you've tightened up the noose. You wired me like a light bulb and you're leaning on the juice. Will they find me in the trunk of some derelict Dodge? A victim of love and sabotage. Oh, love and sabotage.
L.A. The only place in the world where everybody you meet is on their way to become somebody else.
This really bugs me. Do you guys ever say this to you?
What?
You go out somewhere and you're like, you know, you're going on a nice social event. You're only walking along and everything, and like usually backstage somewhere. And some former boyfriend walks up to you and goes, "Hi, God, you look great!" With like a total surprise, like, what do they expect you to look like? A piece of shit. What? Yeah. I don't understand. What do they think I'm going to look like? It makes me sick. I hate when guys say that.
Return to the planet of the apes. We apes have been eaten.
Pagans of West LA number 2, hated, circa 57. The Dell Vikings and Anita Ekberg really got me through. The lights were on at the Coliseum,
dreaming
of Bardot at the Wax Museum. Rock and roll madness was our self-defense. Schoolgirl desire was the sacred fire. We were victims of passion, with no real action. There was no factory where we paid our dues.
We broke
silver chain
in dirty rain
of your Christian
ancient
repression.
Teachers told lies to families and themselves.
Apes,
we choked on hot dogs,
drinking
peanut
wine
soda,
and
beer.
Grapes. We'll stay
behind
your inspiration.
Walls of passion, we were pimple,
if you'll be our pets.
Cream warriors.
You are voluptuous, I'm
carrying black tulips.
I run with long
men
and jungle
tomorrow,
legs.
Or the boys of
I
yesterday.
Kiss you with my enormous mouth.
And we miss that. So many Cinderellas.
I am your joy.
We mean
I ever go to sleep.
Go ahead.
Check him out.
You're regular.
I don't know.
Yes.
I've seen him here once or twice.
He always dances on stage.
Wait a minute. Look
hey,
at him.
Look at that Nina Hagen.
Come on, this
wow.
is so straight out.
Hey, wait a minute. Isn't he gone?
I don't feel like
don't
dancing
know.
Right away.
I want someone to ask me to
I
dance.
I saw him on TV last
oh.
week with another guy.
All right.
What is it?
I feel like a meat market when we do that.
I don't know, but he certainly looks good
to
me.
It is a meat market.
Check out those legs.
Oh.
Woo! Check out those
I'm going.
Pants.
I don't care what you're going to
oh,
do.
Oh, baby.
Well, don't
I want
leave
him.
Me.
I really want him. I'm gonna get that
boy. Oh my God.
I want that boy. You're not touching
oh,
that boy.
He's
mine.
Yeah, the one, the
yes,
blonde.
That
oh,
mod.
That mod. I love him.
Oh, he's gorgeous.
Look at that jacket. Those pants.
Love that earring.
Look at that crop in his ear.
Hey, where are you from?
Hey, I bet he's
from Redondo Beach.
No, Burbank. Hey, maybe Hollywood. How come no one ever lives near us?
I want a boy from Santa Monica.
Okay, so we're in the mid-60s. Was it really draft problems?
Draft problems, heavy draft problems.
Lawyer shit?
Lawyer, yeah. Conscientious objector, possible faggot. You know, I went down, he said to transfer up to San Francisco. This is after 2 years of hassling with this thing, you know, trying mm-hmm. to get a 1Y and all that in school, or 2Y, whatever they call it. And I went to San Francisco, and I failed the induction, man. They took me into the room, and they said, listen, we really don't want it. We don't need you. We honestly
Why
don't need
you.
Why
did you fail?
Because I was very straight ahead. You know, I said, listen, I in this society, I stop at the red lights and I go for the green. You know, I'm functioning. And if you think you need me, you know, I'm okay, I'm available. And the guy says, well, I don't think we need you. And the song that went through my head when I went out of So Glad by the Cream, man, it went through my head for 3 days straight. Now, is that damage or what?
And just a long time ago, when I was a kid, I had a choice, and I made a bet against SC, and John McKay was the coach at the time against Air Parsegian, and I made a bet, and I gave up so many points, and I started crying, because SC came back in the game, and I prayed for SC to win, because I knew I was going to lose the game, and I said, I'm never, ever, ever going to go against SC because that's my team. I'll never give them up. I'll never back down from nobody. They're my team. I'll fight anybody. They're my team. And that's it.
Ladies and gentlemen, to conclude our halftime show, the Marina Swingers.
Well, the tradition is for SC to beat the crap out of UCLA every year. Not just beat them, but annihilate them! Well, UCLA fans, they are always around when things are getting on the get going good. But when things are on the bad, they're never around. They just go in the woodworks. And then when you bet with them, you can only collect from half of them. Because they're welchers. They welch. There's nothing worse than a welcher. And I hate welchers. No doubt about it. Those Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders are amateurs compared to the SC cheerleaders. This is a man's game. You guys have got to go out there and try to kill each other. It's war. It's like the Greeks against the Romans, whatever. Annihilate them!
Vision of Jack for Jack Kerouac. Lost baseball cards and lines of bop. Mindstorm sailor riding Tulane seas. Lone angels wet with wisdom. Yage sages expounding heavy light. The doorway to hell is plainly marked no exit or life insurance. Vagrant voyeurs find no keyhole. traveling salesmen tell old jokes. Castrate Christs squeak bad blessings, parts. A thermos of hemlock and a tin of dreams, hot lunch for a lonely poet.
You have the right to go out with a guy and leave with a cute one who comes along.
You have the right to insult anyone to their face who is not as cool as you are.
You have the right to sit on the toilet seat even though it springs back up.
You have the right to be drunk and obnoxious.
Like a fountain. You have the right to walk with leaves and toilet paper stuck on your spike heels.
You have the right to pick up your skirt so everyone can see your pretty petticoats.
You have the right to wear your lipstick all over your face, but only when drunk.
You have the right not to pay for your own drinks.
Know your rights.
Know your rights. Know your rights.
Wonder drugs and all, but I discovered some amazing stuff while I was dead.
Are there any girls?
Meet the Beatles, 1964, age 5. My brother's best friend's aunt worked at Capitol. We got the record. We listened to it in the living room on that little thing. That little, not a stereo, just a one-piece thing. They were the coolest thing. They were everything. They were life. They were just the thing to, the most exciting thing. And once they went to a party, I think it was the party that Peter Fonda was at, you know, in Brentwood, because I grew up in Brentwood, which is like a nice neighborhood. And there was a party down the street, and like there was like cops all over the place. And we were like little kids, about six, seven, eight, trying to figure out what was going on. But the rumor was that the Beatles were at this party, and I bet they were. We were obsessed with them. After I graduated college, I came back to L.A. I had to put a band together, but I had to do it on my own. I'd been working with somebody from my past. It didn't work out. So I made a flyer that listed all my favorite bands. I listed The Last, Love, The Bo Brummels, The Ventures, The Blue Caps, Gene Vincent's band. I mean, I listed a medley of bands, my favorite bands. I went to the Whiskey when some band was playing one night. I put a big stack of flyers. They're really cool flyers. They had drawings of different the guitars. I was secretly hoping that people would play Vox bass and a Rickenbacker guitar and stuff like that into the bathroom. And this was really sad because every time I went into the bathroom to see if anybody had picked up a flyer, they were all in the trash can. And I kept going in and putting them back out on the sink. And then finally, whoever hated me for putting those flyers in there ripped them all up, shredded them. So I was, like, really bummed out. I was very depressed. At the bottom it said, must be nice, in the biggest letters of the whole thing. John Lennon's death blew my mind, but I took it as a message, as a signal to get it together and to do what I always wanted to do, because he was such an inspiration to me. My current band came through an ad on the Recycler. I met the Peterson girls, sisters, and it was like we knew that night that it was it. That was all it took. I mean, they knew who the grassroots were. I mean, they were into all the same things that I was into.
Brother Matt.
Do it.
Thank you so much. What made you do what you did to us with your cyclage?
Technological breakdowns. Okay. Yeah, so that was side four of English
as
a second language.
In the last four appearances, we brought four sides of English as a second language. Thank you, Harvey.
Sampling of Harvey Kubernick there. So, Tough Muffin, we had some couple herpes of stories there. Chuck Dukowski was in there, Tequila Mockingbird. A few voices from yesteryear going back about 40 yesteryears.
Yeah, you believe. Anyway, thank you so much. We're at the end of the second hour, August 30th, 2022 edition of What the Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. August 30, 2022, it's the third hour, What for Pedro Show.
Tonight. Thank you. only one. I was an open book. You gave that dirty look, and that was all it took to convince me that life isn't hard.
Watch for Pedro Show. Start off the third hour. Sleepyhead doing new alchemy. We were talking about Dick Lloyd and his alchemy out. Itchy Self. After that, with God Bless the Ego. Miriam Gendron. This for, she's from Quebec, Montreal. Farewell. Bridge of Flowers, Brittle. Tragic Assembly with Stilted Transmission. And finally, Life is Hard. Sleepyhead. So let's talk about this most recent record.
Yeah.
Well, bring it. I was there.
Well, you've been asking so many questions. We were waiting for the questions.
Yeah.
What about this new album?
Yeah. When we recorded those three songs with Derek, that ended up being the last on Wild Sometimes. That studio, we recorded at Q Division Studios, which is one of the legendary Boston studios. We realized
which one I recorded at Fort Apache.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah,
we've
so,
never recorded.
So we knew we wanted to record there. We kind of did this record in batches of about four songs. So we got the first four songs together. We're playing with Derek all the time, which is really easy because he lives 5 minutes from our house. We have band rooms set up in both houses, so we don't have to go to a rehearsal space, just go down and start playing. So we recorded four songs. We took another year or two to write another batch. We recorded those four, and then the last four or five was kind of started in the pandemic, but we were, I think we were kind of an appealing band to the studio when they started letting people back in because, well, Rachel and I are one household and Derek's just one other person. So, and they knew we were, a little bit older, being more careful. I don't know. So we actually got a lot done during the pandemic, yes, finishing the rest of the record. Then we just got this really great guy to master it up in Boston, Jeff Lipton at Peerless Mastering.
Well, let me get at the producer. Yeah. There was three different sessions, right?
Yeah, all with the same producer.
Same producer. Now, how'd you meet this guy?
Yeah, so we met him when we recorded. Well, we recorded at Q Division in the 90s. We had one session that Eric Masanaga, who was putting our records out at the time, we were on his small label, brought us there. So we had...
Well, and it was to try digital recording for the first time, and exactly what you would fear the most happened. It disappeared.
So we had been there before.
What do you mean disappeared? Like you lost your recording songs?
Yeah, the files. We had trouble with the files. So that nothing ever came from that first time. But it's a great studio.
Oh,
it was like a new tech at the time.
We keep going back.
Yeah. So we knew we wanted to record there and just talk to John about producing it because he didn't produce when he recorded those other songs. He was just engineering. But he just had a really great vibe, and we correctly determined that he would be a really good match for us.
Was he also the engineer?
This is John Luffer, who really is a producer, but he happened to just be engineering one session we did.
Well, sometimes the same guy will do both jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, our sessions at Q Division, there is a couple, they have some great engineers. There's always at least one or two engineers there. So he could focus more on really producing, but of course doing everything too.
Since he was in batches, there was no writing in the studio. You would come in there with finished songs.
Yeah. Sometimes you start recording and we'd realize that some of our harmonies had notes in unison and you have to go okay, that's not working. But most, and also try and we would try stuff too. Like, let's see what the piano sound. Let's get the Hammond out. In fact, that song New Alchemy has an actual Mellotron. We're like, let's get the Mellotron out. So there was stuff.
They got a Mellotron at their studio?
Yeah.
Let me tell the listeners about this.
Yeah.
Gotta do.
You can hear it on a Beatles Strawberry Fields and shit. Exactly, but people, it was like 8 tape recorders.
Oh, it's crazy. It's a crazy thing.
Of like a shit ton, right?
But nothing sounds like, none of the digital simulations of those sound like the thing. So it's like, that's another thing that's great about recording at a place like that is they actually have that.
You're
like,
talking resources, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing you like that.
Do a 12-string part, there's a amazing 12-string rip hanging on the wall you just pull down. And the amps they have just are, because a lot of the recording, like there's some guitar pedals on there, but almost all of the guitar sounds are just like really great amps with no pedals, just cranked up.
What about this tune, Good Goodbye?
That's one of Derek's tunes. Yeah, that's
okay,
a great
I want to play that. This is for you, Derek.
Coming.
What about the ragged triple R? What if you and me got married? What if me and you just soldiered on? I was thinking about the future. Cut down, get your suture on.
Our show last music for this edition. Started the chunk off with Eric Tune for Sleepyhead. Goodbye. And then David Gerard, who's a Bostonian. Follow the Path to the Sea. Mini Beast. Now this is Peter Mission to Burma, right? Drummer man. Not only did he move to Providence, Rhode Island, but he also has another guy on drums and plays guitar now. And this is his proj here, Mini Beast, with Steam on Ice. Then Hot Pursuit of Happiness with Tollum, his new proj. Who Will Lose? And finally, Sleepyhead, Can You Leave the Light On? What's that one about?
That?
Well, I sing it, but Chris wrote it, so I'm going to let Chris talk about it, and then I'll chime in if I need to.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, just the, it's for, like writing songs for Rachel to sing. I think it's a song like a relationship going badly.
Good, because I thought it was like that Mo 6 commercial. That guy that, yeah, with that voice, you would know this voice right away.
It's kind of like, can we get this, can we make this work again? And like, can you forgive me? And can you take me back? But it's the woman is the kind of one with the power in the relationship in my mind.
Chris, let me ask you, do you have like, when it comes to the spiel, the words,
yep,
do you have like a notebook of lyrics or do you write on demand? Like, whoa, I need spiel here. And so you write, or do you keep like a backlog, like kind of a resource?
Yeah, I have a little notebook, and I sometimes type some things too. And it's just, it's more like, is there a song that needs lyrics? And then I work on it, and I'm kind of slow with it. But I am working on a new song that I've kind of had a breakthrough recently.
When does the title come?
When does the title come? It really depends on the song. Like, Can You Leave the Light On, it came early because the chorus part came really early.
I'm glad to hear that, because I have to start with the title. And, like, almost everybody I ask that question, they put it on last. But if I don't have it as a title, I have no focus.
Yeah. No, I can see. I totally can see that. I think that's the case sometimes. Like, especially if you think of a really good title, like New Alchemy, for instance, like that was this place in my hometown growing up, and I always wanted to write a song inspired by it. So that was almost easy to write the lyrics because the idea was just there hanging over the top of the page, you know?
Well, not really, but you can enlighten me.
Yo, well, yeah, the New Alchemy Institute was this place in the 70s on Cape Cod where these scientists were trying to, like, experiment with, like, completely sustainable living, like growing all their own food, fish farms, recycling human waste, which is not easy to do. And I used to go there on like field trips when I was in elementary school, and I just always
There's a couple towns from us here, Pedro, called Carson, and yeah, we call that turd farm. But it's it's good they have them, because they used to just shoot it right into the ocean here. You know, Pedro's in the harbor. Yes. So you can imagine towns that live by the ocean where they just shot that shit right into.
Literally.
You know, turd farm's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
You said you're working on a song right now.
Yeah.
Because this is a trip, right? You get an album done, even though this baby took a while, over a span of years, right?
Yeah.
You're already thinking of the next record, right?
Yeah, we got to pick up the pace. I mean, this was 8 years between albums, and it was 15 years between the previous two. There was a reissue in there that helped a little bit. But
it's beautiful that you got the band there, you know, when it's time, like Orson Welles, right? No wine before it's time. But now you want to pick up the pace. And if people want to find you on the internet, where can they go?
You can go to sleepyheadrockband.bandcamp.com. That's, you know, obviously the most helpful to us, but it's also streaming just about everywhere.
But you ain't got your own Sleepyhead website.
Yes, sleepyheadrockband.com.
Okay.
You can find everything there.
That's great, because it's like having your own fanzine. I mean, we can staple up flyers on those commercial telephone poles.
Yeah.
But you have your own fanzine, unfiltered.
Exactly.
Kind of opposite of that turd farm's job. Maybe it is the same. It's beautiful. I love the idea of keeping a band together like that. And also, it's a partnership, right? Having a band is like having a marriage, too, in a way.
Yeah.
And it seems like Derek is a great third cat.
Yeah, we're having so much, like, we're playing all the time. I've been in this band since I was 19, and I'm 51, and I'm having more fun now than I have ever had in the whole history of it. So
beautiful. Well, when you get this other batch done, all three of you come back on the show, please.
Sure.
Really good. Brother Matt.
Yeah.
Thank you for such an aiding in of that. People, it's been the August 30, 2022 edition. While Pedro, she'll keep your powder dry.